I'm in conventional medicine. I'm a, you know, an MD prescribing doctor. I'm doing all I can, but I think it's really people in your world. And I give great credit to you and Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson. And, you know, there's some big voices that have come out and, you know, exposed what's happened and are telling Americans and the people, you know, across the world the truth.
Hello, critical thinkers. Welcome to this new episode of Healthy and Awake podcast. Here we question the conventional, explore the unconventional, and seek truth in health and wellness. I'm your host, Mike Biera, and today we have returning guest, Dr. Peter McCullough, who's a board-certified cardiologist and internist with over 1,000 publications, recognized globally for his work on cardiorenal syndromes. He's a leading voice on early COVID-19 treatment protocols and spike protein detoxification. He's the founder of the McCullough Foundation. And honestly, I can go on and on. You're so well accomplished. So welcome back to the show, Dr. McCullough.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, I know there's been a lot going on in the world, and I barely even know where to start. There's so much going on, but maybe with autism, I know RFK has been talking about that quite a bit. And even just before the pandemic, there was this heavy wave of MMR and autism narratives in the news. And now it seems like we're kind of going right back to where we were just before the pandemic. So can you kind of give us an overview of what's going on with all that?
Well, it's National Autism Month. We're coming to the end of it, Mike, April of 2025. So it's worth it to talk about it. It is the childhood epidemic of our time. The CDC report on April 17th, 2025, was an absolute bombshell. And they're reporting data from 2022, three-year-old data. I can't imagine how bad it is now. But it's autism now, and this is strictly defined. The CDC has 16 autism network sites. They carefully screen the childhood encounters and needs for social services and learning disabilities. You know, this is solid. This isn't conjectural in terms of a diagnosis. And at these 16 sites, which are representative of the United States, they've arrived at an autism rate of 1 in 31, which equates to 3.2% of the childhood population. And when you and I were kids, that rate was far less than 1%. In fact, when I was a kid, it was 1 in 10,000, now 1 in 31. And there's tremendous variation. So in the report in Laredo, Texas, it's less than 1%. But in California, it's 5%. Now, people have said, well, you know, we're just recognizing it more. And the point here is that according to CDC data, 27% of that autism population has what's called profound autism. And profound autism is defined as an IQ less than 50, unable to speak or communicate, and in most cases needs 24/7 care, even unable to use the toilet correctly, you know, self-managed toileting and bathing and showering. This is, Mike, this is existential. And in the CDC report, at the end, there's no alarm. There's no call, you know, for urgent research. There's no call for therapeutics, no call for investigation of the etiology. There's simply an acquiescence to say, well, we should get ready. We need more, you know, social services, learning disability services, home care services.
Why is this so hard to talk about? I mean, this next part is just my own opinion, but it does seem like in the culture, there is a push to really focus on acceptance and normalization of this, which I guess you can make the case for is okay. But as you mentioned, it like there is this acquiescence and almost an avoidance of talking about what's really going on. I think a lot of it started with Andrew Wakefield, who honestly, I don't know much about. And now it doesn't seem to me like they're giving RFK fair coverage. Again, that's all my opinions. But do you have any take on that, or am I kind of on the right track?
Yeah, I think you are. There seems to be there's this undercurrent of I think deep-seated guilt. And Robert F. Kennedy brought this out at his press briefing. He said, we're doing this to the children. The children are born normal. and something is happening to them, you know, around the age of 0 to 8, you know, by 9 o'clock, by 9 years, it's all done. They either have autism or they don't. And, you know, I'm thankful. I thank my lucky stars. My kids don't have autism, but, you know, my office, I see more and more young people with autism, you know, young adults with autism. It's obvious we're in an epidemic of autism. And there seems to be a denial of this on mainstream media. I saw medical commentators on mainstream media. I'm a frequent contributor on Fox News, and even one of my fellow frequent contributors, Nicole Sapphire, got on and said, well, there's, you know, I disagree. There's no real epidemic. It's really just genetic changes and increased recognition. It's like, no, that the genetics don't change that rapidly. And this isn't just subtle increased recognition. I mean, this is profound. Autism is, I'm sure, you know, it was recognized as a major problem for decades and decades. These are people, as RFK says, you know, will never be employed. They'll never, you know, be able to write a poem or vote. And you can imagine. So, you know, there's all this tension. One of it is, well, okay, for the parents who have an autistic child, you know, that's water under the bridge. What do they do next? And, you know, they don't want to hear anything more about what caused it. They just need to know what's being done now. For those with autism, and if you go to the National Autistic Society and the Autism Advocacy Network, for those with autism, they want acceptance. They want, you know, what's called this acceptance of their neurodiversity. So we can understand all that. But for those without autism, our great concern is, what is, you know, behind all this? What are the risk factors for autism? And when we get to risk factors for autism, that's where immediately people start to get uncomfortable.
Well, let's make them uncomfortable. What are they?
Well, I gave the keynote address at the Autism Summit in San Diego this month for National Autism Month. And I'm an epidemiologist. I'm an adult medicine doctor, internal medicine, cardiology, but I'm trained in epidemiology. I use those skills. Epidemiology is the study of the distribution and determinants of disease. So I just went through the data. So, and there are secular trends, with all of these risk factors that would partially account for these dramatic elevations in frequency. So one is older parents. So a man over 40, a woman over 35, that's an acknowledged, I think, minor risk factor for autism. There's a slight increased risk. There are common genetic variants. And if we look at any of these genetic variants, again, they are minor contributors. A bigger contributor is delivery of a premature baby. So premature delivery is defined less than 37 weeks of gestation. And in a meta-analysis of all the synthesized studies, this is shocking that a child, a preemie child, a NICU child, has about a 20% chance of developing autism. Okay, so that's pretty big. And we have, you know, there's neonatology is a field now that children are saved. They're delivered early and they're saved. There are precipitants of early pregnancy. You know, one of them is actually the mother taking vaccines. So this is true for influenza. In fact, in the influenza package insert, when a pregnant woman takes the influenza vaccine, they should be warned, hey, listen, this can cause a premature delivery of the baby. The same with the respiratory syncytial virus vaccine. So, you know, vaccines in year 2000, they were never given to pregnant women. They've kind of crept into modern obstetrics in the last 25 years. But women have to know taking vaccines in pregnancy, very, very little benefit and a big risk of having a premature baby. So if I was a young parent today, I'd advise my spouse not to take any vaccines during pregnancy. Pregnancy is a natural process. But the big risk factor, the absolute big risk factor for the development of autism and a broader envelope of neuropsychiatric disorders, including attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, autism spectrum disorder, seizures, tics. There are a grouping of disorders in Europe called the essence disorders. And the Europeans have done a lot of work on this, that the big risk factor is combination vaccination. And there is a causal chain of events. So in a CDC paper by Duffy and colleagues, they clearly showed that combination vaccines can cause febrile seizures. The children go home, they get a very high fever, they get deathly sick, and temperature over 104, the little baby's brain can't take it, and they start having a seizure. And it's due to inflammatory factors.
Sorry, Dr. McCullough, real quick. Are you saying like multiple different injections or something like the DTaP that has multiple in one?
Well, both, right? So the DTaP has 3-in-1. The MMR has 3-in-1. The MMRV has 4-in-1. So when they start to get more than three or more, that's the Duffy paper shows. So it's typically MMR plus the Haemophilus influenzae B, for instance, or hepatitis B. So at most well baby visits, they're getting more than three at one time. In fact, there's a time period between 12 and 15 months. It's actually 16 things at once. So the inflammatory factors, the cytokines, they elevate in the body, they go into the brain, they raise temperature, and they provoke a seizure. Well, an important paper by Nielsen and colleagues from Sweden demonstrated that when a febrile seizure occurs, then there's a 40% chance that child converts to autism. There's some permanent brain damage. And it's not hard to imagine, you know, a seizure in a baby with a very high fever having permanent brain damage. And they can end up with autism. They can end up with ADHD. They can end up with having epilepsy, just recurrent seizures. So this is well established in the literature. And then if we start to examine in general, do childhood vaccines have a cumulative toxicity on the brain? Papers by DeLong and Geyer and others show that, you know, Andrew Wakefield, who was the first to demonstrate this concern in 1998 in The Lancet with the MMR vaccine, it was a valid paper for 10 years. And then ultimately, with tremendous pressure from the pharmaceutical and vaccine industry, Lancet withdrew the paper. Wakefield, the mainstream media and the medical orthodoxy has, you know, debunked, discredited, and they try to attack him as a person.
Right.
But they've never said anything that's wrong with his paper. You know, nobody ever actually attacks his paper, and there's other authors on the paper. So, Wakefield seems to be this focal point, and that's actually the title of our Substack, Focal Points Now. And the question is, for instance, Wakefield was cited again 2 weeks ago in JAMA in a paper about vaccine hesitancy. And so the question is, if Wakefield is so debunked and so discredited, why is he continually cited? Why is his name brought up over and over again? I personally know him. He's a gastroenterological surgeon from the UK. He's very rational. He was just studying the GI connection between autism and, you know, observe these children taking the MMR and observe this dramatic conversion to autism. And of course, parents will tell the vignette that their child was fine, took a big battery of vaccines, got really sick, and then developed autism or developed a tic. Now, of interest, all of the other disorders are going up as well, like tics, which are these facial uncontrollable movements, seizures, ADHD. You know, ADHD now is about 11% of the childhood population. So these are all skyrocketing together. So it can't just be increased recognition of autism. Nicole Sapphire must be wrong on that because, you know, why are tics going up as well? So, you know, there's no single exclusive cause of autism, but I can tell you the risk factors need to be analyzed and now they need to be modified. And we need an all hands on deck call for therapies. You know, autism is grossly under-researched for such a common problem. You know, we have drug companies making antidepressants, anticonvulsives, other drugs, virtually no drug development for autism. It asks the question, why? Why wouldn't drug companies want to make a treatment for autism? There seems to be this collective guilt. But like, I think behind all this, I think people know, as RFK said, we're doing this to the children.
So you laid out a pretty clear and strong case and perspective on all this, but there are still some people who have Andrew Wakefield's name anchored into their mind. The moment someone like him or yourself or myself start talking about autism, they kind of tune out. They won't listen to it at all, no matter how much data you present and facts and statistics and logic and everything. Do we need to convince those people, or do you see us moving forward without them? Are things going to change? I just don't know how to wrap my head around all this.
Well, what I do, Mike, as you know, is I may be your only guest where I cite the data. People can actually find every single paper that's been published. So a very important paper was published by Mawson, and it was published in the journal Science Public Health Policy in the law this year. And it's from the Florida Medicaid system. Now, they had data on, up to 9 years old on 49,000 children. So it's a pretty big study. And about 10% had no Medicaid visits for vaccines. Now, it doesn't mean they're completely unvaccinated. They could have gotten vaccines through a school program or something else, but it's a proxy for being unvaccinated or lightly vaccinated. And then they had those who took one or more visits for vaccines, even up to 10 visits. And they found the rate of autism in the unvaccinated group at 1.1%. And autism was 2.9% in the vaccinated. Those who had the most visits for a vaccine, they had the greatest overall rates of autism, greatest risk for autism. And so the point of the paper is we now are up to about 10%, and the CDC data show this as well, that the parents have got the message. And I said, listen, I can't risk this. It's just, Haemophilus, diphtheria, it's just not a significant enough risk to have a child end up with autism. Measles, mumps, all that's manageable. In modern day medicine, we should not have any measles deaths. And it looks like so far in the measles cases in the United States, all of those deaths were avoidable with proper treatment. It's sad when people don't get proper treatment, but I imagine the measles deaths so far, they're going to end up with malpractice cases because the parents know there's been enough commentary where they know that their children should have gotten, a vitamin A protocol and immunoglobulins. They should have gotten secondary antibiotics, corticosteroids, inhaled nebulizers. They should have gotten proper treatment. And so parents are looking at this and saying, we haven't had polio in the Western Hemisphere for a very, very long time. Why take any of these risks with vaccines? So a few principles here. And, I am not against vaccines. I'm just aware of the risk now. I took 69 vaccines myself. My children took dozens of vaccines, so I'm not against them. But a few principles. Vaccines are far safer if they're given separately as opposed in combinations. So, for instance, the MMR is considered so dangerous in Japan, it's not even allowed. They give the shots separately, Mike. They give measles, mumps, and sucks, and rubella separately in Japan. They won't give them together. Giving things in combination, dangerous. The second principle is vaccines are far safer when they're given later in life, when the neurologic system is done developing and people can, self-manage themselves in terms of reactions. And the third principle is they need to be given at appropriate times in the appropriate people. So let me give you an example of the rubella vaccine. That should only be given to girls because it's used to prevent congenital rubella syndrome in pregnancy. Little boys can't get pregnant. They don't need rubella. They don't get significant illness with rubella. So that's been an overkill when the rubella vaccine came out and the decision was give it to all the boys and girls. And I remember when it came out as a single vaccine, I was a young kid and we were all, roped into taking the rubella vaccine. No one said, wait a minute, this is for girls.
Gardasil, too, they do the same thing, right?
What's that?
Gardasil?
Yeah, for Gardasil. Now, Gardasil can have a male benefit, but it's largely for gay and bisexual men for anal and penile cancer. So, that's the group that would really benefit. But the problem is Gardasil is only protected against 4 strains of the human papillomavirus. Now there's dozens and dozens of strains and people are like, why? It's obvious. There have been studies in gay and bisexual men. It doesn't really prevent anything. Another example of just a vaccine given at the wrong time is the hepatitis B vaccine. So it's given to all babies at the time of birth. It's only really needed in women who are hepatitis B positive or IV drug abusers. So, you know, it should be administered just in a handful of cases per year in the United States. Now, would be needed as children, you know, in teenage years and have sexual encounters or get tattoos or go into healthcare and get exposed to blood or body fluids, anything with needles, you worry about hepatitis B. So, and there's been studies show that the current hepatitis B schedule, when the kids really need protection in the teenage years, it's already run out. They don't have any protection. So it's just an inappropriately timed vaccine. So the whole vaccine schedule needs to be reevaluated. And I think the principles of safer to wait, single shots, and then risk stratification is going to make this far better. Far better, because you know, I think there are some vaccines that have changed human history. The polio vaccine is one, rubella vaccine is another. You know, it's a relative convenience not to have measles. We used to have about 500,000 measles cases in the United States. Now, the measles deaths nowadays would all be preventable. I don't think we should worry about people dying of measles. And you know, we're making every year, Mike, we have somewhere between 200 and 1,200 measles cases. I think right now we're at 800. You know, last year, do you know how many measles cases there were in Europe?
No clue.
It was 125,000 cases. But nobody, you know, Sanjay Gupta and Anderson Cooper would never mention that on CNN. You can see the deceptiveness of the reporting here. And the mainstream reporting is, there's a measles outbreak in West Texas. Message? Everybody should take a vaccine. It's like, no, it's too late for the vaccine. The vaccine is not treatment. Everybody should get into treatment mode. So for instance, you know, these vitamin A protocols, you can get liquid vitamin A over the counter. It's used for acute treatment. 100,000 units per day, children under age one, greater than 100,000 over age two. And you know, the studies show vitamin A deficient children at higher risk for severe measles. So why wouldn't we kind of boost vitamin A? You know, those little kids who like to eat the carrots and the squash and the baby food? I mean, you know, the carotene is vitamin A. That's protective. But I think everybody should be looking at, you know, are they getting some vitamin A per day? You don't want to get burned. There's a unique relationship. In fact, a randomized trial published in New England Journal of Medicine showed giving vitamin A to really sick kids with measles reduces the severity.
Hey, have you noticed how broken conventional medicine is and it only treats symptoms instead of solving root problems? I mean, it's no wonder more people than ever struggle with chronic health issues, stubborn weight gain, low energy, and plenty more challenges. Actually, here's how Mike, a client of mine at Avantia Health Optimization, feels about our hyper-personalized approach.
Number one. You save me focus of attention. I have other things that are pressing and pending. I no longer have the playing time. So I need somebody to help me get the information I need specifically. You're saving me hours upon hours of time, but you're also saving me the youthfulness and clarity you have of cutting through the chase. So you have saved me time, financial money, the thinking, and the labor, the intense labor, and that is worth all the money in the world.
So as most of you know, I'm Mike Vera, board-certified health and wellness coach, host of Healthy and Awake podcast, and founder of Avantia Health Optimization. We deliver hyper-personalized coaching addressing lifestyle as the missing link. Whether you're battling chronic health challenges, aiming for sustainable weight loss, or you're a busy executive or athlete needing peak performance, I'm your guy. Your first session is just $1, so you can try out health coaching, get a feel for it, and you can visit AvantiaHealthOptimization.com or visit the link in the show notes. So check out Avantia, because your health deserves solutions that truly work for you.
So, you know, our public health messaging for the longest time has been on just take more vaccines. That's not treatment. And the vaccines aren't perfect. So our CDC, again, deceptive reporting, is saying that 95% of the measles cases are unvaccinated or vaccine status unknown. Wait a minute, this is the CDC. They're going through every case, and they've either taken the MMR or they haven't. This idea is unknown in the vast majority. It's just, that's an unacceptable level of epidemiological investigation. So Ben Edwards, someone who I know, he went to college with me at Baylor. Ben is out in West Texas taking care of these kids. Ben, like me, has taken plenty of measles vaccines. I've taken 4 of them. And sure enough, he gets measles. And, you know, every time I check my immunity, my antibody titers, I don't have any. And a paper by Bianchi and colleagues shows that about 20% of people who take the measles shot, they don't get any immunity to measles. So they're going to get it anyway. So the answer is not just more measles vaccination. The answer is be prepared for this and we should treat it. But, you know, vaccines have provided these benefits of, you know, it's convenient not to have chickenpox. It's convenient not to have measles. It's important, obviously, not to contract polio. You know, these are important outcomes for sure. But with each one, there's consequences. So with the chickenpox vaccine, sadly, if you get the chickenpox vaccine, you're more likely to get shingles as an adult compared to natural chickenpox. With measles, if you get natural measles, you have much more durable and complete immunity than if you take the measles vaccine, just as an example. And we can go on and on.
Well, I'm sure we could. I mean, there's so much to cover on this topic. And I know a lot of parents, new parents, I work with clients who are expecting and they, you know, want help thinking about all this. Are there any good resources? Obviously, your Substack lays a lot of this out there. Is there anywhere you can think of that parents can go to kind of have a more nuanced take on this that isn't just straight mainstream stuff?
Yeah, so go to Focal Point Substack. We publish every day. You get it free. You get an email about 4 or 5 a.m. with all the data. And I just cite the literature. So it's not opinion. It's just we're giving you the facts so you can digest them. Key interviews like this one and others, Focal Points. And then I'd suggest the World Council for Health 2023 report. It's called Safer to Wait. And it gives all the evidence on the vaccines. You know what's the straw that broke the camel's back was the COVID-19 vaccines being put on the routine schedule. These are genetic, only Pfizer and Moderna are on the schedule. They're genetic, novel, synthetic messenger RNA that it's emergency use authorized. The children have largely all had COVID. They're through it. It is not medically necessary. It's not clinically indicated. And people have said, listen, if the same committee that's telling us to take the MMR vaccine is also telling us to take the COVID vaccine, that's it. And so a lot of parents are walking away from the childhood vaccine schedule. So
yeah,
but we're going to see now we'll have comparative data. And in my experience, Mike, once a parent decides no vaccines for the children, they don't change their mind. And, you know, 5 studies show that completely unvaccinated children have healthier outcomes. You know, if they're born normally, they have lower rates of asthma and allergic diseases, lower rates of the neuropsychiatric diseases. They're healthier. And I meet parents all the time with their children who took no vaccines and they're just healthy as horses. I was at a seminar recently. And I met a man 84 years old, took no vaccine.
Interesting. Well, I actually do want to shift into some of the COVID stuff since you brought it up. But I am wondering, what's your take on the state of censorship right now? The past 2 discussions you and I had, we had to be very careful. And nowadays, I'm kind of surprised when I look on LinkedIn or even Instagram and some of the words that you've used today, like vaccines even, we had to kind of censor that. Do you think I still have to censor that, or do you think things have changed a bit?
Well, you know, I'm on all the platforms like you. So I think the biggest breakthrough is YouTube. YouTube appears to have dropped all censorship on COVID and the vaccines. Remember, the censorship on YouTube and Facebook and the Meta platforms is they were suppressing any hope of treatment. So people felt scared. There's no way to treat any of this. And then any information on vaccine side effects were suppressed. So that censorship drove people to mass vaccination. So it was a pro-vaccine censorship. Well, YouTube finally has dropped pro-vaccine censorship. So you can rebuild your YouTube library and people can go back. It's going to take a while to build back. So that's been a big advance. Facebook, I think, is still running some censorship programs. LinkedIn is for sure. Instagram, I'm worried. And you know, the problem with these censorship programs is they're tightly linked to monetization. Yeah. So when you take a hit, then there's an immediate revenue hit. And so there's a lot of people on these. They said, listen, I can't risk it. So there's a lot of podcasters, Mike and others, that say, listen, I can't have Dr. McCullough on. It's too risky.
Hmm.
And I think fortunately, YouTube is back. And don't forget, people still can run attack programs on social media. An example is on Twitter or X. You'll know when someone's running an attack program. You'll post something, and then you'll look up the replies, and then the replies will come in. There'll be a reply that's some type of a sexual reply that's totally out of context, or another
one. To get it flagged.
What's that?
Probably to get it flagged.
Right. It's a cryptocurrency one, and it just terminates any more discussion. So these are some type of programs or bots. So someone is out there trying to terminate any more discussion on a tweet. That's going on right now. That has not been cleaned up. So we still have censorship out there. And you know, I think a big form of censorship is on the mainstream media. People will say, well, why can't the mainstream media talk about this? And the answer is pharmaceutical advertising. So if you sit and listen to any mainstream TV, turn on CNN or Fox or you know anybody out there, ABC, NBC, we are now at a substantial fraction of all the advertisements on TV are pharmaceutical advertisements. It's just one after another. My wife is always commenting on this. And they're usually for like psoriasis or these diseases. They quickly, you start to use acronyms, got people all confused. I really don't think they're helpful at all. Usually some advanced monoclonal antibody or a rare disease, a kinase inhibitor for a deeply involved cancer. It just wouldn't be broadly applicable to the population. But here's how these ads cause censorship. If a major advertising client, let's say, is Pfizer, and Pfizer has their ads, Pfizer has influence over the company. So if you and I go on and say, listen, we're concerned about the Pfizer COVID vaccine causing blood clots, Pfizer can turn around, put pressure on the station and say, listen, you know, we're a client. We're going to pull our advertising, you know, get this off of there. So that's how it works. So in order to get censorship out of mainstream media, we actually have to get rid of pharmaceutical advertising. That'll be very important. And when that advertising is gone, then, you know, people are going to realize, wow, this is, you know, the public really wants to know about COVID vaccine side effects, or they want to know about, you know, a drug side effect. And so we'll start to have stories right now. So, you know, the mainstream media is not trustable in terms of medical issues right now because of pharmaceutical advertising.
And the ads are ridiculous. I'm always laughing at people with like, they're dancing around. They have serious conditions and they got a big smile on their face. It just looks ridiculous. And now they're advertising for dogs, like antidepressants for dogs. I mean, it's just what a crazy world. But,
Mike, there's a great ad for dogs. I don't know if you've seen it, but I had on my show, Judy Morgan. Judy's considered a holistic veterinarian. She's like a big influencer on Instagram and she's a lot of fun. You should have her on your show.
Okay.
But Judy was telling me that people should, you know, cook foods for their pets and they should, you know, have, you know, a whole variety of foods, not just feed your dog kibbles. And she made an interesting presentation and people are doing this. So they are getting these kind of gourmet meals for their pets. And sure enough, there's this ad where there's this single guy and he has a girlfriend over, he has a dog. And this girlfriend or this date, she starts nosing around in his refrigerator. And she goes, isn't this dog food in your refrigerator? He goes, yes, it's the top of the line gourmet food for my dog. And then she looks over, she goes, it's still dog food. like she's disgusted. And then the next scene is he's showing her out the door and he's cuddling with his dog saying, you know, we can't let that terrible date disrupt our man a dog relationship. It's a great ad. You got to see it.
I'll have to find that one. I'll link it in the show notes.
So pets are also up there in terms of advertising. And by the way, pets are getting sicker over time and pets are excessively vaccinated. So the same thing that's gone on with humans, my dog recently passed away, bless her heart. She was 16 and a half years old. But the last email we got from the vet, Mike, I counted up. They wanted her at age 16 years to take 17 shots. Yeah. So, you know, the shots, the pills, the chemicals. Judy Morgan, for instance, is greatly concerned that, again, it's gone out of control. I've talked to several veterinarians to say, listen, you know, rabies, distemper, there's a couple that make sense, but you just keep going and going and going and going with more and more shots. We have to understand vaccines stimulate the immune system. The immune system can be misdirected and it can attack itself. It can actually, in a sense, get in its own way. It can deactivate itself. And, you know, there's increasing evidence, as we've recently seen with a big paper using WHO data, that the COVID shots, for instance, backfire. People who take more and more shots are more likely to get severe COVID.
Well, not only that, I know a lot of people, again, clients that I work with, family, friends who come to me, who at the very beginning, before the COVID vaccine was even out, I was saying, hey, maybe you should be cautious. These companies have criminal histories. They pull drugs all the time. I warn people. And now those same people are coming to me saying, you know, I all of a sudden have rheumatoid arthritis, or I got cancer really fast, or I had rheumatoid arthritis and now I'm in a constant state of flares all the time. It never goes away. And it used to go away. Lupus, IBD, neurological conditions, all kinds of weird things inexplicably coming up. No family history, rapid onset. And people are starting to ask if there is a connection possibly between the jabs and what they're experiencing. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I personally think as a medical doctor that it's essential to take a full COVID history. How many episodes of COVID suspected and documented and during, you know, what major outbreaks, the wild type, the alpha, delta, Omicron. And it's essential to take a vaccine history. How many COVID shots did they take? Which brand? And then in my practice, I measure antibodies against the spike protein, which are stimulated by both the infection and the vaccines. So we get a proxy of how much spike protein is in the human body. If the spike protein is still there, the immune system is going to be continually stimulated and we'll see high antibodies. The spike protein is been cleared, then we'll see very low antibodies. Occasionally, we'll see no antibodies to the spike protein. Probably about 3% of the population has not even been exposed, but 97% have. So that's a very useful test. We can get the LabCorp extended range. I think everybody listening ought to ask their doctor for a spike antibody test. The LabCorp extended range, less than 0.8 is normal. It ranges up to 25,000. A low risk test is 0 to 1,000. Most people there have just had a brush with COVID. But progressively more than 1,000, I start to worry. I see blood clots at 5,000, 10,000, heart damage, you know, 15, 20,000. And so it's a very useful test. There will be spike tests available. The spike protein, particularly in the vaccinated, is in the blood probably for months or years, so you can measure it. Albany Labs, Invitrogen, Yale has an assay coming along. There is a current resource, check it out, in Germany. It's called Inmodia, I-N-M-O-D-I-A. They're open for business. They'll say if people will send their samples there to measure spike in the bloodstream. But the spike protein is clearly in our blood. It's in tissues. It's going to the brain, the heart. It's directly causing the blood clots. It's physically in the blood clots. I think all of your questions about autoimmunity and other problems, they all roads lead to the spike protein. The spike protein is the spine on the surface of the virus. It's this little tip right here. And uniquely, when we get COVID, we all get a little piece of the spike protein in us.
Well, I'm glad you explained it, because I was actually just about to ask you, what exactly is the spike protein? Because it almost sounds like, if you're watching a movie and there's a pandemic, it almost sounds like a fake thing. Like they would call it the spike protein. But this is something that is clearly real. It's something that you can measure. And I would encourage people to get the test if you do suspect that the jabs that you got might be causing you problems. And I know there's other tests too, I believe. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a board-certified health coach. But the D-dimer test I've heard to help kind of test potential for clots. Is that right?
Right. So the spike antibody is essential. Again, we're looking for the antibody to the spike protein. Anybody who's had COVID, anybody who's taken the vaccine, I think should get this test. I personally have gotten it. Now, other tests that are reasonable, you know, there is a long COVID panel offered by Incell DX if you really wanted, you know, all the various cytokines. And I think personally, I think it's a bit of overkill, but some people really want to explore this, they can get the Incell DX long COVID panel. I think even Quest or LabCorp has a long COVID panel. It's very detailed cytokines, interleukins, and you can get a sense of, you know, how much inflammation is in the body due to the spike protein. But a key test that emerged was the D-dimer, which is a risk predictor for spike protein blood clots. And I use LabCorp as my lab. So LabCorp assay, I see two important cut points, less than 0.2, completely normal, low risk. 0.5 is the threshold at the abnormal for the test. So in between there is intermediate, 0.2 to 0.5 in the normal range, but intermediate risk. Over 0.5, definitely higher risk. I mean, I see 0.6, 0.7 people with blood clots. Another important test for the heart is troponin. That's a test for heart damage. And there's two others I order, blood BNP and galectin 3. Those are my go-to tests as a screen to see if there's been any heart damage. And then on autoimmunity, as you mentioned, I measure the blood ANA, the anti-nuclear antibody, and that it's reflexive, the anti-citrullinated peptide and rheumatoid factor. Just because of expense, unless there's kidney involvement or a skin rash in the vaccine, I don't order the ANCA, the anti-neutrophil cytoplasmic antibody test. I don't order it unless that's the case. And then, of course, I get basic chemistries, liver, renal function, thyroid. But in each patient now, the spike protein is playing a major role in their health. And everything from blood pressure control, weight gain, depression, neuropsychiatric disease, you can't go through life now without considering, is the spike protein, you know, causing some problem in the next person that you see, the next patient you evaluate. And that's the reason why, you know, I've published and continue to refine McCullough protocol-based spike protein detoxification.
So thank you for that list. I'm going to put together, I'm just going to extract that as a protocol. When people ask me things like that, I can give them some resources to actually help them beyond what I can help with. But I'm also further, this is going to sound like I'm winding down, but I still have more questions. If I do work with someone like that, to what extent can the wellness company help? Like if I want to refer for telemedicine, is that a thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wellness company has doctors 24/7. They're very well versed in the methods, McCullough protocol, most widely used protocol to handle long COVID and vaccine injury syndromes by a mile. It's the only one peer-reviewed, published, refined. There are products that are completely based, honest, copyrighted. And so McCullough protocol based spike protein detoxification and a self-directed long COVID bundle. So one of the things you can do, Mike, is you can direct them to wellness company and say, listen, there's a long COVID bundle of products. You can buy them and patients can direct their own care. You don't even need a doctor's visit to get these products and start to manage. And, you know, a knowledgeable health coach like you, other healthcare providers, terrific. So the first part of the long COVID bundle is the Ultimate Spike Detox. Ultimate Spike Detox is the core of the McCullough protocol, Nattokinase, kinase, bromelain, and curcumin. This dissolves the spike protein, blocks inflammation. It's got some MITRE ingredients in it as well, which all are evidence-based. People need to be on that for a year or more to clear the spike protein. Next in line is a product called MindLift.
I saw that. That looked really cool.
Yeah, it's lithium orotate, very low dose, ashwagandha. It clearly helps people, you know, clear up their thinking, elevate their mood. There is elevated energy, which has L-carnitine needed for the heart, acetylcholine, QQQ. And then lastly, there is Healthy Heart, which is a beetroot extract, B vitamins, and thiamine, a resveratrol. And so what we do at the Wellness Company is we put many ingredients in a single capsule, and we'd use medicinal grade high dose. So these are not low dose supplements. So across this long COVID bundle, these four products, Ultimate Spike Detox, MindLift, Elevated Energy, and Healthy Heart, there are 26 unique ingredients. And so, you know, one of the things that I've learned to appreciate in COVID, it's not a single drug problem. It's not. People say, well, I just want to take vitamin C. I tell them, listen, you can try. It's not going to work. Others say, well, I just need to take ivermectin. No, you know, ivermectin has a role, but we need to use multiple natural products that help the body resolve this syndrome. Many, many people, there are so many people with long COVID or problems after the vaccine. They need self-management at the Wellness Company. Very affordable way to get products that are specifically designed for people to self-manage this syndrome. And my advice, if they're going to buy multiple products, is to get a membership. So it's three different levels of membership. The low level is just to get some discounts and get the newsletter. I think it's just, you know, 10 bucks a month. The middle level at 49 bucks a month is a deep discount on supplements, but also free prescription medicines, which is key. Free generic. It comes from our Beaumont, Texas pharmacy, and it's really important. Like, so people on thyroid, blood pressure, it just comes free. No shipping charges. Just, you know, once your doctor prescribes and through that pharmacy, you're good. And then the upper level is 99 bucks a month. Now it's free prescriptions and free supplements, which is huge, because if you're going to buy two or more supplements a month, you might as well just get the membership. The Wellness Company membership, best bargain out there. And tons of people do it. And that way they can order. And there's a great interest, Mike, in people solving problems with natural products. And they're willing to take multiple supplements as opposed to going straight to prescription drugs.
Sure. And especially when they have, you know, actual challenges like the ones we've discussed. I know a lot of people, they'll take supplements because it's advertised to appeal to something they don't even know if they have, or, you know, it just sounds like a lot of guys, you know, hey, this will help with testosterone. It, you know, this is clearly something that solves an issue. You have the science to back it. You're leading this whole movement trying to wake people up on all this stuff. But I know we're close to time here, so I have so many more questions as always. I'm going to try to lump some of them together into one big question. As I know you've seen, the White House recently conceded that the COVID origin was from a lab. Mm-hmm. It was a lab leak. I know a lot of people are wondering, will Fauci ever be arrested? There's just so many thoughts. And even further, I do wonder when we finally, hopefully, see justice and these bad actors finally pay the price for the atrocities they committed, what will things look like on the other side? I think a lot of us are kind of yearning for that. Mm-hmm. Other side of all this. So between the White House admissions, the potential of Fauci getting arrested, and the other side of this, are you optimistic about what's ahead, or what do you think the near future looks like?
I'm starting to understand the methods that are being used by the current administration. And this is what, you know, I've come to understand. This whole pandemic was so horrible. 5 years of, you know, patients unnecessarily dying with the illness, and then people being forced into taking unsafe and ineffective vaccines, all the deception, all the fraud, the lives lost. It's so horrible that, you know, I don't think the public could take a shockwave, an entire download of this is how horrible it is. And so what's occurring, whether it's by design or just by the natural organic process, is an incremental release of reality. So we have on the fraud of the public health response by the CDC and the Public Health Service, we have the House report in the Department of Energy committee by Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington State, which basically says our CDC deceived the whole country. It was fraudulent, this masking and social distancing, lockdowns and pushing the vaccines. It was fraud. And then on the House side, the select subcommittee for the origins of coronavirus led by Representative Brad Wenstrup, they've, you know, concluded that the virus was created in the Wuhan Institute of Virology as a U.S.-Chinese collaboration. Anthony Fauci intimately involved, Dr. Ralph Baric, Peter Daszak, David Morins, Xingling Li in China. And now we've had the White House, you know, finally get in line with the House Select Committee, as well as McMorris Rogers' report, and say, yeah, fraud occurred and the virus originated in the Wuhan lab. Now, the White House has not addressed the suppression of early treatment and has not addressed vaccine safety and lack of efficacy. It's almost like the things that led to unnecessary death, those key elements have not yet been publicly recognized by government agencies. And the real question is, Mike, is that going to happen during this administration? People are saying, what are they waiting for? Because if there is capitulation on the lack of safety of vaccines, the next question is, why are they still on the market? And so a lot of people in the health freedom world are getting pretty impatient. They're saying, listen, you know, we think we're getting a smoke screen with concerns over food dye or fluoride in the water or microplastics or, you know, chemtrails in the sky. We're getting a smoke screen. I mean, you know, the idea is there is a fully pseudo-uridinated genetic vaccine product being injected into human beings that we learn every day is creating a horror scene in each and every body who takes these shots. So we're in interesting times. It's up to independent journalists like you and those in the health freedom world that you're playing a very, very important role now. You know, I'm in conventional medicine. I'm an MD prescribing doctor. I'm doing all I can, but I think it's really people in your world. And I give great credit to you and Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson. And, you know, there's some big voices that have come out and, you know, exposed what's happened and are telling Americans and the people, you know, across the world the truth.
Well, I'm very grateful for your work. I know my audience is very grateful too. And I'm sure you hear that all the time. And it probably gets to the point where, you know, you hear it so much, it doesn't mean anything, but I really mean this from the bottom of my heart. I want you to know how grateful I am for what you do. And I just think all the time when we're decades ahead, just looking back where I get to say, you know, I got to talk to Dr. Peter McCullough on my show, like the guy who led the charge on all this. So thank you very much. I know my audience is grateful too. Dr. Peter McCullough, anything else? Where can people find out more about you or anything else you wanted to close us out with?
Well, I think everybody should go to Substack, Focal Points, subscribe, get a free subscription, and get the email every day. You're going to get the critical updates. You're going to be way ahead on the news cycle. We have all the breaking abstracts, interviews, manuscripts, and go look at Focal Points, written by myself, McCullough Foundation epidemiologist Nick Hosher, and then our author historian, John Lee. Everybody should go to the Wellness Company, twc.health/courage. Check out all the products of the Wellness Company. I'm the chief scientific officer, and I'm joined by Dr. Drew and so many other leading doctors. Wellness Company offering 24/7 telemedicine, health service, health coaching, pharmaceuticals, emergency kits, nutraceuticals. Wellness Company is the go-to company. For those of you who can't access or directly order from the Wellness Company website, you can buy everything we have on Amazon as well. So that's perfectly fine. And then follow me on America Out Loud Talk Radio, McCullough Report, and Pulse, America Out Loud. That's the audio version. Get that on your cell phone app. make sure you check that out. And then, of course, my book, Courage to Face COVID-19. We'll have a new one coming out. We have a book arrangement with a New York trade publisher. And it's going to be coming out on vaccine history, which is very important. It's going to explain how did we get into this madness? And the answer is about 300 years of history.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. And for any of the audience who still maybe has questions on some of the topics we talked about, I encourage you to check out previous episodes with Dr. McCullough. We've had two, as well as with Nicholas Holscher, covered a lot of good stuff. So questions might be answered there, or reach out. I'll put all your links in the show notes, so definitely check that out too. But folks, stay healthy, stay awake. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Please remember to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple. Thanks again. Stay healthy, stay awake.